supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Family is made possible in part by the generous support of Devereaux, the nation's largest nonprofit provider of behavioral health care for children, adolescents, and adults with developmental and intellectual disabilities, behavioral disorders, and mental illness. Devereaux operates at 15 centers in 11 states throughout the country.
I'm Dan Gottlieb. Thanks for listening to Voices in the Family. Well, when you say the word teenager or tween, you usually get an eye roll from somebody, a parent of a teenager or late adolescent. You'll see an eye roll, a shrug, a groan, or a grunt. Because what we see often with our teens is unpredictable behavior. We hear about a grouchy son or daughter, somebody who takes unnecessary risks that scare parents something terribly. And at the same time, they want yards of independence and privacy. Well, if you are one of those frazzled moms or dads or grands or other guardians of an adolescent, advice is on the way. My guest today is Dr. Laura Kastner. She's a psychologist and professor of psychiatry at the University of Washington. She's the co-author of Getting to Calm, Cool-Headed Strategies for Parenting Teens and Tweens. She joins us by phone from Washington State. Laura, hi. Welcome to the show.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. If you want to join our conversation, the number is 888-477-9499. We'd love to hear from you if you are a parent of a teenager or about to become. Give us a call, 888-477-9499. And hey, if you are a teenager and you cut school today, give us a call. We'd love to hear from you also. Well, Laura, one of my best friends in the world is a little two-year-old guy named Jake. And he's normally a delightful child, but there are many times when Jake gets vociferous, says no, and throws a tantrum or an object. So I was thinking about Jake as, you know, I was doing the research for the show, and I was thinking, well, that's exactly what teenagers do, only with more sophisticated cognitive skills. So
yeah.
What do these two have in common?
Right. Well, you know, you don't like to say this in front of teenagers because it's so disrespectful, but to be technical, we often call adolescence the second autonomy, the first autonomy being the terrible twos, also known as the terrific twos, because it really is about forming and being aware of a separate self. So when you say no, 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 then you know you're separate and have separate wants and needs than your parent, the dominant person in the dyad. And then, of course, with adolescents, it's the same, where parents have different agenda for their teenager than the teenager may have for herself or himself, like staying on the internet and doing Facebook instead of doing their homework. So it becomes the oppositional kind of dynamic again, because the teenager wants to assert their very separate will upon the parent. And out of this is the magical thing we call individuation, the separate self that becomes more individual and more competent over time in early adulthood. But in the meantime, there's all this time of opposition, rebelliousness, risk-taking, and so forth, as you mentioned in your prologue.
Well, wait a minute, though. I mean, I know many teens, friends of mine, not people who I see professionally, and several of them say, my parents are impossible. And, and you know what? I know their parents, and they're right.
Right. Well, you know, the truth is somewhere in the middle. And, of course, if you look at a family over minutes and over hours and over days and weeks, you'll find moments that they get along well and they're very reasonable with each other. They operate according to the same rules and functioning ideas of what's expected in the family. And then you'll find them in a meltdown moment, and they both look insane because they're both being irrational and emotional and having extreme feelings and thoughts. So that's why we called our book Getting to Calm, because it is very hard to stay calm during those moments of conflict. And they have so many conflicts because, of course, they have different needs. Mom and dad want them to conform to routines at home and doing their homework and obeying the rules and curfew and staying safe. And the teenager going through puberty and going through all the developmental transitions want more time with their friends and want to kind of do homework when they want to do their homework. And so herein lies many conflicts.
Well, before we talk about, you know, the difficult teens, let's get perspective here. Most teenagers are not difficult or defiant, or are they?
Well, you know, it depends on the issue. Obviously, difficulties during adolescence are not inevitable, and they are not universal. Some teenagers, about 10%, are just easy as can be, a cakewalk through adolescence. And they're probably granted wonderful genes of being fairly happy and optimistic and flexible and just enough anxiety to get their homework done, but not so much to have meltdowns. I mean, some kids are just blessed by families, environment, and many advantages and good temperaments, and they're going to have an easy time of it. But actually, about 60 to 70% are going to have increased moodiness and argumentativeness and risk-taking, although they are going to come out perfectly well-adjusted in early adulthood. However, those things, moodiness, argumentativeness, and risk-taking, can cause a lot of hassles in the family, and that's why it probably takes better than the average emotional, cognitive resource skills on the parent's part to get through feeling good about the family life and having a good, 11 to 18 years is about 7 years, well, middle school and high school. About 20% of teens will have very serious problems, psychiatric problems, problems with criminal life and
20%?
Well, epidemiologically speaking, yes, it can be up to 20% when you add depression and anxiety and addiction and criminal behavior, yeah. But let's look at the bright side. If 5, 10, 50, it depends on the sample, that leaves 90% that do just fine, right? But that's early adulthood. And that's why it's so important to have parent skills to get through these years, because middle and high school, that's a long path. And, of course, depending on how well we handle some of the challenges, will determine their outcome in early adulthood.
Well,
the parents that have good skills are more likely to have kids that come through in a competent way.
Well, we're gonna get to that. What good skills mean and how to get them. But I want to another perspective question here. I've got a brand new friend who I just met today, and she's in her early 20s. She moved to this country from China when she was 16 years old. And I was going over the show with her and telling her what we're doing, and she just said to me, in a very dispassionate, matter-of-fact way, she said, "Oh, we don't rebel in my country."
Mm-hmm.
We don't.
Culture plays a huge role here, and that's why it's so important to say these kinds of things that we see are not universal or inevitable. And any traditional culture that puts a high, high value on obedience and even passivity, you might say, to the parent and elders, is going to have less of these expressions. Although if you go all over the world, you will see puberty and you will see brain development changes and you will see increased moodiness probably, but it will not be expressed near the kind of ways we see in the United States.
So let's talk about this culture and what happens here. It seems to me that it's getting worse. And personally, I put a lot of blame on this crazy self-esteem movement that started in the 70s. How did we ever get here where we've got to reward kids and make them feel good about themselves?
Right. Well, probably, to be quite honest, for about 10 years, those of us who write in this field in child psychology have been throwing that monolithic concept out the window. I mean, Nobel Prize winners can have low self-esteem and, you know, serial killers can have high. Right. So, I mean, you know, we got to really not see this as the holy grail that we're after. But in going after your question specifically, you know, there were a lot of people coming out out of the being parented in the 50s with a, maybe more of a tilt toward authoritarianism, which is highly restrictive, high value on obedience and propriety. And so the lesser view on emotional health and feelings. And so what you got is this backfire effect, the feel-good movement, the self-esteem movement, the feelings are everything movement, where they threw the baby out with the bathwater because compassion and empathy and caring about feelings and emotions is very important, but so is authority. You don't want to throw that vital role of authority out the window. Sometimes you get that backfire effect of instead of stopping at 90 degrees, people go 180, and that's just as bad as the other.
Yeah, they didn't throw the baby out with the bathwater. It seems that they threw the parents out.
Authority. You know, research has shown that authoritative parenting is the optimal parenting style for predicting really good outcome in late adolescence. And the three critical ingredients are high warmth, good effective communication skills, but high authority. Mm. So authority is one of the top three of the components.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking with Laura Kastner. She's a psychologist at the University of Washington. She's the co-author of Getting to Calm, Cool-Headed Strategies for Parents, Teens, and Tweens. If you want to join our conversation, the number is 888-477-9499. We're going to be going to the phones in just a few minutes, so please call early in the show. Again, it's 888-477-9499. If you are a parent of a teen or about to become one, give us a call. Or maybe, you know, your child's beyond their teen years and you've got some wise advice to share with us. Again, that's 888-477-9499. Laura, it seems to me that kids are worse. Now, and the research is consistent with that. They are more narcissistic, self-absorbed, and they experience themselves as more fragile than a generation ago.
Right. You know, the research on this is very tricky, and indeed, when you look at actual emotional adjustment, and you look at productivity, and you look at their scores on a variety of things, whether it's authoritarianism or anxiety or so forth in the 18 to 25-year-old phase, it actually isn't that clear that kids are coming out worse than they ever had. And actually, the quotes go all the way back to Aristotle in, you know, hundreds of years B.C., where you'll find the elders that say kids are going to hell in a handbasket, and they've never been so indulgent, narcissistic, debauchery, wine, women, song. So we have to kind of watch it, because what happens is we're always appalled with the next big thing, whether it's self-cutting, whether it's, kids going to the streets or whatever, the tattoos, the piercing, the rebelliousness, the disrespect. But we can also show so many wonderful examples of teenagers in college that have never volunteered more than they do now, and kids that are as hopeful and optimistic and motivated to do good in the world as ever. So, I can look at it both ways depending on what group I'm looking at.
Hmm. So some of my perspective is about research I've read, and some of my perspective is about about me.
And of
being...
course, we're all affected by media, and what gets on the front page of Newsweek is the next big terrible thing, not kids doing lots of volunteer work. So we're very affected by media as well.
Well, we've got to take a short break. We're going to be back in just a couple of minutes. I want to talk with you about kids' brains, more specifically about what's happening, what we can expect and what we can't expect, and what we can do in terms of parenting, what good parenting is and how we can avoid some pitfalls. Like I said, my guest is Laura Kastner. She's a psychologist, professor of psychiatry at the University of Washington, and she's written Getting to Calm, Cool-Headed Strategies for Parenting Teens and Tweens. Well, I want to give you another number to call now, and that's 888-345-9499. As many of you know, we are in the midst of our fall fundraiser, and we would love to hear from you. Give us a call and show your support, not just for Voices in the Family and what you've gotten out of it, but for this kind of programming. And in today's world, it gets more and more unique and more important to hear these kinds of shows. So give us a call, 888-345-9499. Thank you for that call. And I'm going to toss this over to my dear friends, Susan Palenko and Mike and Scott. Hello, ladies.
Hello, Dan. Thank you so much. And it's a great conversation. Susan and I are both parents, but not quite of teenagers yet. Susan's son is 9. My son is 2. So we have some time on our hands, but we both said, oh, we want to read that book. And I think your guest just made an excellent point, Dan, is that a lot of times what we hear in the news and on the headlines is very scary, but you won't see a headline that screams, teenager spends time volunteering at nursing home. Those are the headlines we don't see. But thank God, those are some of the stories that we do here on WHYY. We talk about good news, too. And that's a great thing that I oftentimes enjoy. You make that kind of coverage and this kind of conversation possible with your membership when you call 1-888-345-9499. We have a wonderful group of volunteers here. They're all individuals who've decided to spend their day with WHYY to come here to take your call, so let's keep them busy.
We can keep them busy by giving, and you can make it happen by giving us a call, 1-888-345-9499. Take a moment, $10 a month, $120 a year. We have a mini goal this hour to hear from 25 people showing their support for Voices in the Family and Dr. Dan and WHYY. Now, I know there are more than 25 people listening, and I know more than 25 people will definitely benefit from this conversation with Dr. Laura Kastner. And this kind of, what I love about Voices is the ability to take a book like Getting to Calm and really bring it down to the level that parents like us can say, okay, this is accessible to me. I know what I can act on. I know the strategies that I need to use. Those are all ways in which you can take action when you hear something and you learn something. Dr. Dan breaks it down for you. What we're asking you to do, what we're inviting you to do now, is to break it down for us and be here for WHYY. 1-888-345-9499.
And there's also something about Voices that I always enjoy is a certain level-headedness in the approach to a topic. As I mentioned before, when you read the coverage on what teenagers, what adolescents are like these days, you might think, oh, geez, this whole world is populated with young monsters who are destroying each other. But then you listen to this conversation and you see, okay, there might be some issues and there might be some differences. But on the whole, here's where we are. It's not that bad. We can all get through this together. And Dr. Dan always kind of gives me that sense of it's going to be okay. And I really appreciate that because I need that. I need to hear from Dr. Dan on Mondays that I'm going to be all right. And he always does that for me. And for many other people, because, Susan, we get so many emails from people who tell us, I've been touched by your show. I've been touched by something you said. And that is always so reassuring. And right now, if you've been touched by something Dr. Dan has said, by something we talked about on the show, why don't you make that call at 1-888-345-9499 and let us know that you care.
And you can do that at WHYY.org as well. You can go online and show a pledge of support there. When you go online, you can also see archived Voices in the Family programs online on WHYY.org. It's all possible for you. We have many ways in which you can engage with us, and we're very excited about that possibility. But what we're inviting you to do right now as we speak is to go to WHYY.org, become a member, show your support for Dr. Dan, or give us a call, 1-888-345-9499. We're going to go back to Voices in the Family and hear more from our guests. And since you're listening, now is the time to become a member. Do it now.
Thank you.
Drexel supports WHYY. If you are at least 20 pounds overweight, you may be eligible to participate in a research study called Project Well at Drexel University. This year-long weight loss study is funded by the National Institutes of Health and is designed to help adult participants lose weight and keep it off without medication. Guidance from weight loss specialists at group meetings is included. For more information, 215-762-1111. 215-762-1111.
We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're talking with Laura Kastner, who's the author of Getting to Calm, Cool-Headed Strategies for Parenting Teens and Tweens. Laura, we've been talking about some of the difficulties and why in broad strokes, but I want to talk about what's happening in adolescent and teenager brains. We're learning so much about brains these days. It's frankly pretty exciting. So what's happening inside their brains?
Right. Well, starting at the end of the 90s, you know, we had more neuroimaging research coming out, especially from NIH, thanks to Dr. Jay Geed, which really documented that there is a fundamental remodeling to the architecture of the prefrontal cortex, the thinking part of the brain, the neocortex, the newer part of our brains. Basically, about half of the neuronal connections up there are being wiped out at around the age of 13. Now, that's the bad news, because, of course, the brain and the thinking brain doesn't work so well during that time, which now we understand why they can be so irrational and emotional and egocentric. The good news is over, you know, the next 10 years, from about 13 to early 20s, there is a lot of brain growth, and that's why, you know, they can become as competent as they can be based on learning and experience during that decade. So it really makes you think about wanting to provide them with a rich education and a good, warm, and connected home life so that they can have optimal brain growth and physical growth and emotional growth.
Well, this is a bit of a tangent, but when you say a rich education, that doesn't necessarily mean to put their little butts in a classroom all day,
right,
and then come
That's
home
right.
and put
Notice
it in
how
front
it
of a desk.
Notice how it follows it very quickly. When you tell somebody, oh, well, based on learning and experience and a good environment, you can have brain growth, which is true. You know, we have this phrase in neuroscience, the neurons that fire together, wire together, which is the more that you do something, the more you wire it in, whether it's playing the flute or doing soccer or having constructive conversations or physics. But a lot of parents think, oh, gosh, well, if it's based on what you do, let's throw them into more education. But as we know, emotional intelligence determines how well you can use your intellectual competence. So you want to have a very balanced life with, you know, physical fitness and emotional fitness and social fitness as well as academic competence.
All right. So here's the deal, Laura. We know now that a brain of an adolescent is developing. We know that the thinking mode, the ability to think about consequences, is impaired, for lack
That's
of
right.
a better word. And the emotional centers of the brain are certainly not impaired. They're certainly firing. So now here I have a 17-year-old about to get into a car, and I know that child is at risk for driving too fast and or drinking. And what am I going to do? You know, I'm going to get them to promise me they won't, and I know that might be worthless. Or I'll take away their keys, and I know that's going to go down the toilet. So
what's a
parent to do?
Right. Well, you know, we were just talking about toddlers as well, and I think when a parent lets their child hang upside down at 4 years of age on a jungle gym, it's an act of faith, but you know that they need to be able to climb around the jungle gym, ride their bike, go to the park. In a way, all of parenting is an act of faith because you're hoping that there's not extreme risk going on, but there's always risk, whether they're 3 years old or 5 years
right.
old on a bike or whatever. But that is why, of course, we don't let them drive at age 13, and 3 years later there's just a little bit more maturity going on. But there, of course, there's a risk. And that is why there's a graduated license law now in a lot of states. Do you have that in Philadelphia? Do you have it in Pennsylvania, where you have to drive for 6 months without a peer in the front seat?
I am not sure, and I'm looking at my producers and engineers, and all of them have that confused look. So,
oh, really?
That's our final answer.
It's state by state. We're getting more people passing that law, and it's based basically on actuarial data where you can just see in the first 6 months there are so many more fender benders and so much more risk taking because basically they don't have that wired in competence yet of natural reflexes. You can have them go through all that, you know, the driving with you in the car and learning permits and so forth, but those first 6 months are risky.
Meanwhile, I'm listening to you as that parent of the 17-year-old, and I'm thinking,
All right, so what do I do? Tell me what
well,
to
what
do.
Well, what we've always done, which is try to take every precaution we can and then follow up on any kind of hijinks they pull in the near term when they get their license. So, you know, basically it's letting the reins out and then pulling them in based on the child's track record, based on their temperament, based on what you know about their likelihood for foul play. But as I said, it's always an act of faith when you let a kid get in a car, and then you have those rules, and then the key to it, the car is almost like a metaphor of letting them go out and have freedom, and they may hurt themselves. And so based on the feedback you get on whether they're using that responsibility in a competent way, you pull in the reins or let it out. So if there's been any, if they went somewhere they were where they weren't supposed to be, or if they come in late, or if you find a beer can regardless of the story, then you sort of dock them some of their access to that freedom.
So what you're talking about is faith, but not blind faith.
No, and basically every day, every week, you will be getting feedback from the family system and from the teen himself or herself as to whether they are safe using some sort of opportunity have risk with it.
Yeah, I want to talk about that feedback and how to read it, but we've got a lot of people who want to join the conversation. So let's go to the phones. We're going to start with Meredith, who's a post-teen. Love to hear from
you.
Hi,
am I on?
You are on.
Oh, well, that's wonderful, and thank you so much for taking me on. I'm just calling. I am 23, and I've my adolescence was filled with developing anxiety, depression, and bipolar disorder, and my parents were really wonderful. You just say I did have some moody moments, but I would say that one thing that always really, really irritated me was the stereotypes about teenagers, because so many of us are trying really, really hard. And so many of us, we're not trying to go out and be stupid. It's not trying to do bad things.
Right.
And I think often people just wish the parents would give them the benefit of the doubt. So I really agree with the statement of, you know, given freedom and see how it goes. Because it's hard.
Yes.
And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, Meredith had so many wonderful points there. One is that she complimented her parents, who obviously stood by her and helped get the support she needed. So I want parents to really listen up and hear that there could be really, really rough times, and I assure you Meredith had them with those diagnoses. But if you hang in there, you'll get the kind of compliment that Meredith just gave her parents, which was so wonderful. The other point was that it's really irritating for young people to be challenged in all the ways they are with peer systems and finding out who they are and making good grades so they can get in college and being the good troopers they are, and then being characterized as somebody said on the news stations, just a bunch of monsters. So yes, some of their behaviors are scary and we get very anxious and we see really nasty, ugly things happen, but we should really watch out for those stereotypes.
Well, I want to take something Meredith said. I mean, she said she gets frustrated by the stereotypes, but she said something, and I want to generalize about it, and you alluded to it too, Laura. But this business of faith, and it is my belief that our children, especially teenagers, need our faith even more than our guidance. And most parents I know and work with professionally, they parent based on anxiety, and these
right.
days anxiety is worse and worse and worse, and faith and anxiety are really perfect opposites, aren't they?
Right, right. Well, you know, kids will notoriously say, oh, probably starting even at age 5, and then it really ramps up in adolescence, they'll say, just trust me. Well, you know, if we can't make that a monolithic kind of thing that we do or we don't. We trust mostly and know when we shouldn't, right? So faith and trust are very problematic because they sound wonderful as a concept, and yet, as I said, this is a day-to-day kind of thing, and depending on the feedback we get as to whether they are responsible with their cell phone, responsible with the car, responsible with their homework and so forth, we will give them that faith, we will give them that trust, or modulate it a little bit based on our assessment about what they need, because they may need, you know, an imposed homework hour, and that's part of our responsibility, because, you know, if they're making D's and F's, it's our responsibility to do something so that they don't fail.
Well, wait a minute. Do something like what?
Well, a very, very successful kind of model that I see is the standard practice is that there are systems in the school where they can put it online. Some schools increasingly have them. So based on whether the parents see online or get feedback from the teachers as to whether they've met the requirements of the week to make a C average or better, they're allowed to have freedom on the weekend. So they can basically have internet cut off from, you know, whatever, 7 to 8 p.m. at night for an hour, hour and a half. They can do homework or not in that hour, but when it is discerned by Friday whether they've done their week's work, then they're given the reward of freedom.
So
we do our work, and then we get our paycheck. They do their work, and then they get their freedom check.
Let's go back to the lines. We've got Bernadette on the line. Hi, Bernadette.
Hi, Dan.
Hi.
Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
And thank you to the author for writing this book. I have been looking for your book for a while. My daughter is 16 just last week. And I was going to ask a question that probably can be answered in your book. And so I'm going to ask a different question that has great courage attached to it instead. I'm going to ask you, my daughter is an excellent student, an only child from a loving, very big, loving, warm home. And she's involved in so many things. Typical stuff with, you know, not cleaning her room or too much time maybe on Facebook and I have to cut it off and all of this. So I'm going to read your book about that stuff.
What's your concern?
My question is this. My daughter has had to see mom, meaning me, go through breast cancer, and I'm only about 4 to 5 years out. And because of some of that, some of the stuff that dad has gone through, we are really challenged with finances and the constant threat of foreclosure, or, you know, it's scary times.
Mm-hmm.
She, you know, you want to say she doesn't know it, but I know she knew everything it too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
She knew I had breast cancer before I told her. So, and, you know, I know that she knows.
So how can we help, Bernadette?
Well, here's the deal. I want to know how much, you know, this kid is really doing great mm-hmm. in spite of all of this. Great meaning lots of friends, lots of activities, and great grades, like
much,
I said. But,
how much what?
Happy-go-lucky. I want to know how much do we tell her when she asks for things or wants things or needs things, and we can't give them to her, or we may even have to make big changes.
I will ask you to take your answer off the air, but I'm going to just say quickly before we turn to Laura, tell her everything, and let's hear what let's hear what Laura says. Bernadette,
that's what I think too, Dan. You know, I often say to my parents, kids know everything, and they look a little startled, and I say, you know, emotionally, we, you know, the brains are social organs, and the emotions are contagious, and even without knowing some of the details, they know some of the emotional hardship of a family, whether it's named because grandpa has Alzheimer's or father's an alcoholic or whatever, they know something, and to have the adult name it is very important, because what happens to a child, especially young ones, but all the way up through teenage years, is if the adult can't handle it, then I can't handle it. And yet if you name it and you say, yes, dad is an alcoholic, we're tackling that, or grandfather has Alzheimer's, or we have economic hardship, that means you're that the if the adult can handle it, maybe I can handle it. Or the adult says, look, we got big problems, but we're were on it, but you should know, because I'm sure you're feeling it through the airwaves here. So I agree completely with Dan that disclosure is important and naming is important. And in these times, I don't think economic hardship is something to be ashamed of. It's almost the norm. I tell my clients, especially those that are getting ready for college, that you should just tell them exactly what the economic situation is so they know what to work with. This is part of their reality that they need to understand fully so that they can make good decisions about how they get loans or how they plan for employment while they go to college and so forth. So I agree completely with you, Dan.
And we'll look at the other side of it also, that if it's not talked about, Bernadette, and your daughter can feel it, then there's a kind of conspiracy of silence there. And the message is, let's not talk about what we all know. And then the sense, the felt sense in the body, is that nobody can really cope with it. And Bernadette, there's some research out that when kids live through adversity, they wind up being more resilient. They wind up being more compassionate. The worldview is broader. And it's a lovely thing to have everyone in the family go through this together. We all learn something about ourselves and one another. So I wish you the best. I wish you health and healing. We've got to take a short break. We're going to be back in just a few minutes with Laura Kastner. She's written Getting to Calm, Cool-Headed Strategies for Parenting Teens and Tweens. And hopefully after our break, she will tell us how to actually get to calm. I want to give you a phone number to call. It's 888-345-9499. Again, that's 888-345-9499. We are in the midst of our fall fundraiser, and this is going to be the only chance you have during this fundraiser to show your support, your commitment to Voices in the Family. So give us a call, 888-345-9499. I know a bunch of you called during our earlier break, and we really, really appreciate your support. So please continue at 888-345-9499. I'm going to toss it over to Susan Palenko and Mike and Scott, who are probably going to say embarrassing things about me. So
Never. The number to call right here is 1-888-345-9499, or you can go online to whyy.org. We have a mini goal this hour of 25 members, 25 calls in to support Dr. Dan and Voices in the Family, and we have 10. So we would like to hear from you and 14 others, and we know we can make this goal because we know there are a lot of people who listen to Dr. Dan who are able to get excellent strategies on how to function and how to move through life. For example, getting to calm. I'm waiting to see how we can get to calm, because that's one thing that I think I need to learn a little more about.
We all do. Give us a call now at 1-888-345-9499. This is really some great advice we've been hearing, very level-headed, very calm and collected kind of advice that you can use in your everyday life. And I think a lot of times that's a service Voices in the Family provides that we really don't get anywhere else. Of course, nobody else has Dr. Dan, that's for sure.
No, exactly.
So we're already lucky in that we have Dr. Dan to come in every week to talk to us and to bring us these kinds of shows. But it's also the tone of conversation. It's just not alarmist. It is a conversation. It's a conversation between two people, between a bunch of parents, and we all can benefit from that. You appreciate that because you're a listener of WHYY and Voices in the Family. Right now, we're asking you to go one step beyond that and become a listener and supporter of WHYY. You can do that online at whyy.org, or you can do so by calling in at 1-888-345-9499. We have a great group of volunteers here. They're all individuals who just decided to come in and give some of their time to make our effort go smoothly here at WHYY.
And we do appreciate those volunteers, and what we're inviting you to do is to volunteer yourself to become a member for yet another year. 1-888-345-9499. A program like Voices is a unique program, and you get to hear the kind of conversation that we're having the pleasure of hearing today, listening to Dr. Dan and Dr. Laura Kastner talk about on-the-ground strategies for parents of tweens and teens, and what you can do, what you need to know, how you can proceed when things get a little rough. Those are the kinds of very practical concerns that you'll often hear from Dr. Dan, and I think I really, really appreciate his on-the-ground approach because it's very, very effective. 1-888-345-9499 or online at whyy.org. Since you're tuned in, make a pledge of support, show your support for Dr. Dan and WHYY.
And Dan, you know, Susan is really known all over the country at this point. He just started writing for the Huffington Post, which is a wonderful new development, and people always email us and call us to tell us how much they've gained from reading something Dan has written, from listening to the show. We're very fortunate to have him, to call him our own here at WHYY. And right now, why don't you make a call at 1-888-345-9499 to keep the show going and strong for yet another year. Our overall goal for Voices in the Family is 25 callers. So far, we've heard from 18, so we're doing really well, and we thank you for your call so far. But if you haven't joined in yet, 1-888-345-9499 or online at whyy.org, and thank you.
WHYY is supported by the Cooper Bone and Joint Institute, managing severe orthopedic injury and disease. Their joint replacement program has received the Blue Distinction Award for excellence and quality care. Whether due to arthritis or a severe injury, Cooper physicians precisely align your hip, knee, or shoulder replacement. Tough injuries, skilled physicians. Cooper Bone and Joint Institute. Locations in South Jersey and Newtown Square. CooperHealth.org/numbers or 800-8-COOPER.
We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're talking with Laura Kastner. She's a psychologist at University of Washington. She has written Getting to Calm, Cool-Headed Strategies for Parenting Teens and Tweens. Laura, I want to talk about how we get to calm and whose calm we're looking for, our kids or ours. I mean, I was desperately looking for a way to get to calm when my kids were teenagers, and they scared the hell out of me. I still have a little bit of PTSD from those days.
It's really true. There are so many hot button issues of the tween and teen years, you know, rudeness and violation of rules and disappointing grades and when they blow you off. And I mean, there's just so many things that push parents' buttons that they need to know how to, quote, get to calm so that they can access their thinking brains and make better choices about how to handle those situations. And in answer to your question, you know, the only person we can control is ourselves. And so instead of trying to control them and to get them to quiet down and to be disrespectful, which could be more respectful, which could be coercive and only things make things worse, it's sort of like the airplane situation. The oxygen goes to self first and then to the child. First, we need to give ourselves oxygen. We need to not vent, but ventilate. And that is why it sounds cliche and hokey. We need to breathe. And this is way more technical and sophisticated than it sounds, because by breathing and keeping our mouth shut, not talking for about a minute, then we stop flooding, which is the emotions in the emotional brain flooding, where the neurons are firing there instead of our reasoning part of our brain. And so only by getting to calm and getting that heart rate underneath, you know, the critical 100 beats a minute level, can we then start firing neurons in our prefrontal cortex, our thinking brain, and then sort of evaluate what approach might do best, you know, to talk now, talk later, talk about discipline now, talk about it later. But the first thing is to breathe deeply, count to 10 like our grandmothers told us to do. There are various breathing techniques that I talk about in the book, but the most important thing is to get the heart rate down, close your mouth, bite your tongue, and then start thinking about, okay, evaluate step 1, 2, or 3, and then go from there. We have this acronym in the book, CALM. C stands for cool down. A is assess your options. L is listen with empathy, and M is map a plan. And by even having a protocol, sort of like a ER physician or a fireman, the more or a pilot in crisis, the more you have a protocol, the more you can start to use that rather than just going off at the mouth shouting, which usually makes things worse.
It's
ineffective at best and hurtful at worst.
Let's talk about that first step.
The cool down.
You know, the Buddha said very in his simple way. He said, "A poisonous snake is only poisonous when you walk towards it."
Right.
So one of the things we could do is, and I encourage people to do this, is that when they are upset, to simply know that they are upset and they need care at that moment. They need care. And I personally, maybe this is a guy talking, I see nothing wrong with walking away.
Right. Well, and it's also, Dan, it's important how we walk away.
Yeah.
If just like in domestic violence situations with spouses, if you walk away saying, you're impossible, you know, you've lost your allowance
right.
for a year, you know, that's a different kind of walking away than what we recommend, which is, look, this is completely unproductive right now. We keep going round and round. I'm going to step away, get my heart rate down, and then I'm going to be a better, parent for you, negotiating what you're going to do this weekend. So I think to also part with a constructive sort of parting is very important, because sometimes, of course, when parents are shouting and walk away, the kids follow them like they're just a little chihuahua, you know, gnawing on their ankles. So how we stop our mouths is also important.
That's a really good point, and that chihuahua image is great, except that can go either way also.
Right.
You know? So let's talk about what happens once we calm down. How do we begin to think about this interaction?
Right. Well, you know, I think this is absolutely, spectacular kinds of science to know that if we are evaluating between 1, 2, 3, or 4 options of how to bridge the gap after a big meltdown with a child, because this isn't just any time we do this protocol, it's when there's a true meltdown. And when we get back together, if we've already evaluated, you know, as I said, talk now, talk later, negotiate a middle ground, tell them it's a non-negotiable, but I'm open to discussing new ways of deciding his privileges or his car access later. You know, how the minute we are evaluating costs, benefits, and risks of plan A, B, C, we are definitely firing neurons in our prefrontal cortex, which means there's a good chance we're going to come out of that with wisdom and good judgment and reasoning. If we just go to the bedroom and reiterate to ourselves why we deserve to be inflamed and irate about our impossible teenager, we're going to come out of that bedroom just as low functioning as when we went in. So we have to use that time in our own timeout, our calm down, if you will, in a constructive way, evaluating different ways of approaching the situation.
Let's see if we can get a call on. We've got Sue on the line. Sue?
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi, Sue.
I just wanted to say that it's a breath of fresh air to hear someone with a scientific background speaking what used to just be taken by parents as common sense. I was born in 1958 and had the benefit of being raised by parents who, I don't like the idea of authoritarian, though their authority was very clear, but it was, as you said, so there was warmth and love, and it was so easy.
Mm. It was balanced.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think many of us of that era benefited from that kind of parenting and
mm-hmm.
grandparenting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just really refreshing to hear that people are saying enough on the what has become ridiculous emphasis on self-esteem and these empty kind of concepts, hearing parents say it's awesome when you do a somersault.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
Yeah. Those words were meant.
It's a substantive effort, not just, you know, that they breathe.
Yeah, it's nice.
The breathing.
Somersaults are nice, but it doesn't mean you're special.
Right.
Sue, thanks so much for your call. Hey, listen, Sue brought up a point that we haven't touched on and something that is of particular interest to me. She talked about grandparents. And
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm a grandparent, and I think one of the things we bring, and this is also brain study, what happens to aging brains, one of the things we bring is perspective.
Exactly.
To the interaction, and we know that this moment is not the moment, it's just a moment.
Right.
And right. I think perspective is essential.
Right, and wisdom. I mean, you've got a lot of experience there. And, of course, grandparenting can be as tricky as parenting because the parent that's doing the best they can may or may not be receptive. It depends on if it feels judgmental or if it feels like wisdom. So grandparents have to really pick their moments when they might be most receptive.
And that brings us back to the faith issue. Like we had to have faith in our adolescence, we have to have faith in our in our adult children and their parenting skills, and we've got to tolerate our own helplessness. Well, unfortunately, we are out of time for today. Laura, I want to thank you so much for joining us. Your book was great, and I love what you bring to the discussion.
Well, thank you so much. Good luck to all you parents and all you people that love teenagers. And thank you for supporting this show.
Yeah, thank you. Take care. Laura Kastner is a psychologist, associate professor at the University of Washington, and she is the author of Getting to Calm, Cool-Headed Strategies for Parenting Teens and Tweens. Hey, next week on Voices in the Family, we're going to be talking about this bullying problem. Our guests are leaders around the country in the fight against bullying, and they're going to share their stories of pain and hope and offer resources. Right now, I'm going to toss it over to Susan Palenko and Mike and Scott. We're going to give you a new set of phone numbers. Mike and Susan?
We will. That new phone number is 1-888-345-9499. That's where you can call and make your pledge of support to WHYY. We had an overall goal of 25 people for the hour of Voices in the Family. We've heard from 20, so that means 5 more people call in, you among them, and we will be there, which would be wonderful. And Dan, it was really great to hear the show because even though I'm far away from the teenage years as far as my son is concerned, but it's nice to get the sense that, okay, when that time comes, I'll be able to do it. I'll deal, I'll cope, I'll get through it, it'll be fine. And that's oftentimes the sense I get when I listen to the show, which is it's really a wonderful thing because there are so many things that we hear about on a daily basis that make us feel like everything is going wrong and everything is bad and mm-hmm. all around us, everything is falling apart. And it makes you feel helpless and it makes you feel hopeless. And then you listen to an hour like this and you walk away thinking, you know, I can do this. We can do this. We're all in this together. There's good people out there. And we're all really a nice bunch of people. And we like public radio. And that's what you do when you call 1-888-345-9499. It's a nice sense of reassurance that we're all working together to make this really a better place.
That's exactly the word I would say is reassuring, because it's reassuring to know that Voices in the Family is here for you. It's reassuring to know that WHYY is here for you. And it's reassuring to know that you can hear an author like Dr. Laura Kastner talk about a book that you can then buy, you can look at it, you can use it as a reference. You have the possibility to be able to act on all of those things. That's what I find reassuring about Voices in the Family. It's why I listen. Since you're tuned in, why not become a member? 1-888-345-9499 or online at whyy.org. Now is the